Irreverent, entertaining, cool. You're listening to LA Talk Radio.
You're listening to Wake Up Hollywood with Nikki Carulla and Eddie Pence, right here on LA Talk Radio.
Hollywood, this is your host with the most, Nikki Carulla. We're going to jump right into this interview. We have a very special guest, the executive producer of an amazing animation team I've been working with as of late, Mr. Mark D'Souza. Say hello, Mark.
Hey, Nikki. Thank you so much for inviting me.
Our studio audience loves you. They love you.
Thank you, studio audience.
So you've been traveling. You've just been traveling all over the place recently, right?
I just got back from, I was just in the Bay Area.
Okay.
So not too far.
How was the weather? Was it crazy?
No, it was beautiful.
Absolutely. It wasn't cold? It's always cold in San Francisco.
It's about 70 degrees, just gorgeous.
That's nice.
So freeways were pretty open too.
Wow.
People are staying home.
Well, I heard Chinatown is completely abandoned right now in
really?
San Francisco. Yeah. Like nobody's going there. It kind of sucks. It's like crazy. The coronavirus. But anyways, we won't talk about that. You've been in animation for how long?
About almost 24 years.
Crazy. And what made you kind of inspired? When did you know you wanted to kind of go into that world?
Well, I always knew I wanted to do something creative. But I start off, you know, I was born in Toronto, grew up in Arizona. And in Arizona, I just...
What city in Arizona?
Phoenix.
Oh, nice. So, I love that city.
A great city, great friends, you know, great town there. But I moved to LA in the mid-90s. And I, you know, in Arizona, I started off in engineering. I was, you know, a civil draftsman. So drawing roadways.
Where'd you go to school? Did you go to ASU?
No, I just like community college and whatnot.
Okay.
So I just took some courses there, learned how to do CAD. I just didn't know how to get into computer graphics because around that time, you know, there wasn't much. And, you know, I'd always marvel at stuff like The Abyss or Jurassic Park and be like, how did they do that?
Right.
You know? And
so it was movies that kind of got you really interested.
Absolutely movies, yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, you know, as a teenager, I wanted to be a musician, of course, you know.
Right.
I suck. I'm a terrible guitarist. You know, I can play, you know, the intro for Smoke in the Water.
We all start there, you know.
And that's about it. But there wasn't a high demand for that, unfortunately,
right.
at the time.
Right.
So, you know, I can play a riff, the opening riff for maybe three other songs.
You should never stop, man. Never stop. Never stop.
But so I was working in civil engineering for a few years, and it was not my cup of tea. I mean, you know, and God bless everyone who's in it because they built our structures, our roadways.
Right.
Our
I was about to say, if you want to learn how to build a bridge, there's your major.
But you know, I just knew there was something else I wanted. You know, I wanted to be in the entertainment industry somehow.
Now, I have to ask you real quick.
Sure.
Because you are half Indian, correct?
Well, actually, I'm adopted. So
okay.
I'm biologically half Chinese, half Ukrainian.
Wow. I didn't know that.
That's
crazy.
I was my adopted parents who adopted me when I was a baby.
Well, even though, but one of them was Indian.
My father's from Goa.
Okay.
And my mother's from Ireland.
Crazy.
So, yeah.
So was the engineering any influence from the Indian side of the family?
No, not at all.
Wow.
It was just, I got into computers. You know, I had a road to get into computer-aided drafting. I thought that sounded really interesting. It brought me closer to doing something graphic, but I just didn't have the engineering brain for it. Or the patience.
Yeah.
The patience
that's
is really,
really what it is.
Because I've got the attention span of a gnat. So.
Right, me too. Especially now, it's crazy.
But so, you know, I did that for a few years, and it was interesting for the time, but I knew I wanted to do something else. So luckily, I nothing was tying me down at that point, and I started applying to film schools. I was like, I've got to go to film school. I need this outlet.
Well, before we go there, so there must have been, you said Jurassic Park, The Abyss, any other movies? What was the first movie that you remember going, oh my God, that world.
Star Wars. I mean,
yes,
you know, as a
answer.
Kid, I was 6 years old when Star Wars came out.
Wow.
And I, you know, my friend's grandmother brought us to it, and I had no idea what I was going to see. And then I was just blown away. I didn't know that it was special effects. I just knew there's this amazing world out there. And as I grew older, I started to learn more about it. And I was like, oh my God, you know, the model making and shooting everything in camera, how amazing is that? But there was no path. In Arizona, by that point we had moved to Arizona, there was no path that no clear path I could see. You know, I'd pick up all the Cinefex magazines, read about how things were done, was fascinated by it, but still, there was no path. So I started applying to film schools thinking, I'm just going to quit my job, go to film school, and, you know, take a stab at doing what I want to do.
And how old were you then?
I was, you know, early 20s.
And where were you working, out of curiosity?
Just an engineering firm, a civil engineering firm in Arizona. You know?
So you had a gig doing engineering?
Oh, no, I'd worked in a few different, you know, I worked in civil a couple times. I worked for my cousin, who was a mechanical engineer, structural engineer at that point. But, you know, those were short gigs. The longest I did was probably 3 years.
Wow.
And I just, you know, the first one was manual drafting. And then I just wanted to get into a CAD-based house. And I got into that, and
this is not it.
I did it for about 2.5 years, and I really appreciated the job. Great people, but then when I started applying to film schools, my cousin called me up and said, "Hey, my cousin in Toronto called up and said I just gave a lecture at this at the school, and they gave me a tour of the school, and they set up this amazing animation and visual effects program."
Wow!
It's like, there's nothing like it. There's only a few schools at the time that were teaching that, and I was like, well, what's it about? Put me in contact with these guys. He said, well, this is probably November, and they had a program starting in January.
Wow, that's and, perfect timing. What was the school?
A school is Centennial.
Okay.
Centennial School of Arts. Centennial College in Toronto, and this was the Media School of Arts, I believe, or I can't remember the exact title of it. The campus was actually the old Degrassi High.
That's awesome.
It's kind of funny. So sure enough, he put me in contact with the head of the program. They were already filled. It was a very small program. So back then, you could only run these programs on Silicon Graphics units.
Wow.
And, you know, the software was Alias, Power Animator. And it was Side Effects Prisms and Softimage 3D. And, you know, it was software that I had never heard of at the time. So he put me in contact with the head of the program. They only had 12 boxes to work on and 12 licenses.
Wow.
For everything. Although these companies had sponsored it. You know, Softimage, Alias, Silicon Graphics had set up workstations there and put an IT guy on ground who's an IRIX specialist. And it was an amazing thing. And I talked to the guy. He said, look, we have another computer. We can make 13, but that's our limit. He's like, if you apply with me now, let me, you know, we'll kind of go through things, see if you qualify for the program. Luckily, I did. So by January 1st, I was walking onto a plane, going to Toronto,
That's
going back
amazing.
To Toronto. And I mean, I'm very grateful that this program director, Nate Horowitz, let me in.
And how many years were you there?
This was a one-year course.
Wow.
Under 1 year.
Wow.
Because there was a few accredited places at the time. The big ones, of course, were Sheridan. Sheridan is the Sheridan and Ringling were like kind of the big known programs at the time, but difficult to get into. And I certainly was not talented enough to get in there. So,
I'm sure most people have a background in it going into that.
Yeah, a lot of people have quite extensive portfolios to get in there. I had no traditional drawing or whatnot, so I just went straight for the computers. So I was lucky enough. We got into the program. I hit the ground running. First day, they introduce us to everyone, and everyone around me has experience.
There's some
people in there who are very senior. They're coming from, you know, graphic design backgrounds and whatnot, and they just wanted to take it up to the next level. This is a hot new thing, and they wanted to learn 3D and CG. And I was very intimidated at the time. So my roommate, the person that the school set me up with, who happens to be the CEO of the company I work for now, he's from India as well. So we hit it off right off the bat, became great friends just the first night.
Is this Jesh?
This is Jesh.
Okay.
Yeah. So we show up at school that day, the first intro day, and I meet all these people. And Jesh had come from a background himself. He came from Germany by way of doing, what was he doing? I think he was doing interactive CD-ROMs on 3D Studio Max. So he was already seasoned. He had done some Indian game shows and live television shows with 3D Studio Max. So he was seasoned. And here I walk in with no experience. just AutoCAD. I mean, I'm sweating bullets saying, I didn't realize what I was getting into. And this is me. I just jump into something like, hey, that's awesome. Let's do it.
Right.
So I was like, well, maybe I made a mistake. And then this kid walks up to me and says, so what do you know? I was like, I don't know anything, man. I know some AutoCAD. He's like, that's it? Oh, I'm going to blow you away.
Really?
And I was like, oh, I made a huge mistake. I am turning tail. I'm going back to Phoenix. That's it. I told Jesh this. He goes, screw that guy. Are you kidding me? Let's just, you know, let's kick his ass. So so I hold with it. And then next I know, we're just flying. This program is just awesome. We have veterans of the CG industry teaching us. I mean, it was access like you wouldn't believe. We had 24-hour access to the studio.
Crazy.
These amazing teachers, these instructors who just were self-taught, knew the programs inside and out. And
was everybody hitting the studio and working on the stuff?
Oh, yeah. We had 24-hour access and everyone used it, you know.
Wow.
And Jesh being the last one there every night.
Wow.
But it was just remarkable. I think that was one of the steepest and the most rewarding learning curves of my life.
And it just teaches you, you know, one of the things I love about like music scores or anything, it teaches you how to use a sense higher than most people use that sense.
Absolutely.
So you're probably using your visuals on a much more acute level than most people are ever accustomed to when they're watching something.
The great thing is that you are here with incredibly talented people.
Right.
Right. Who are learning along with you and you're getting inspired by them.
You iron see sharpens iron.
Right. Exactly. Yeah. Exactly. So I just was flourishing at that point. And I'm not bragging or anything. I'm just saying
I learned. Okay. That's okay.
I learned a lot. More than I ever learned. And it was just
What were the kind of like homework assignments or projects that you had to do for the
creating program? Bumpers for a TV show? Like, you know, just say we had, you know, Canada's version of MTV. We'd create bumpers. That was one of the assignments. Create a quick 15-second bumper. So you'd create that, and then there'd be an animation project. Like, well, you come up with the concept, you pitch it to us, and then you execute it. And then there's a visual effects project. You know, there's going to be live action. You have to shoot some footage and insert something in there.
Oh, cool.
You know, so it was just awesome. It just really ran the gamut. And then, my Softimage instructor he worked for Softimage, and he would just encourage us with coming up with animated shorts. So it was very cool.
That must have challenged you on every level because, first of all, you don't have a portfolio at that point, and and now you're gaining it. But did you find your time estimate as far as how long things took was accurate, or was it completely off as you were kind of going through it?
We just didn't know. You just had to sink or swim. You go in there. If it was too ambitious, the teachers would be like, you might want to rethink that a little bit. But they'd never cut you off.
Right.
They'd help guide you and inspire you and say, you know, you can do more. You probably can get more done that time. More done in that time, or you can, you know, you're not going to finish this project at all.
Wow.
So my final project, I made some silly little commercial about a toothbrush running away from toothpaste at the time.
That's awesome.
It was a cute little thing, but you know, I wanted to show that I could run, you know, do this in this program called Prisms. And but that was the final assignment, yet I was also cutting a demo reel at the time because there's an annual conference called SIGGRAPH, and it's the annual computer graphics conference. And I just knew, like, okay, somebody told me you can find jobs there. And at the time, you know, I think Twister was just coming out, about to come out. And, you know, computer graphics jobs were really, you know,
sought
people,
after.
Basically, yeah. if you could turn on a computer at that time, you can get a job.
Right.
So I knew my goal had to be, I couldn't focus as much on this short as my demo reel. So I cut my demo reel, really tried to polish that off as much as you can with the student reel. And nowadays, the student reels are remarkable. The talent coming out of these schools for the past 10, 15 years, these kids are just remarkable, what's coming out. So mine was pretty subpar. There's no way mine would go anywhere today. But, you know, it's pretty early on in the game. And sure enough, I took that reel, went to SIGGRAPH. I knew the principal owner or the CEO of Side Effects Software. And he was kind enough to put me in contact with a few people.
And did you meet him through the school, or did you meet him?
I met this guy through the... I knew... Well, here it is. There was... This guy liked raves. Okay. So he liked raves. And one weekend... I hope this doesn't make me sound like a dirtbag. No, I just knew he liked raves. And he and some of his team would be there on the weekends doing live visuals with the software called Prisms.
Oh, that's cool.
And it was really cool. So I was interested, but B, I knew that he was running these things. So I went up to him. I saw this kind of DJ booth where they're projecting visuals at that time, and I was like, are you running? I can't remember what part of it. I think it was called ICE at the time or something. But anyways, I was like, are you running ICE real time to project these? He's like, no, this is real time. He's like, I'm using something called Beatbox. I'm like, really? And so tell me about it. And he's like, you know something about side effects software? I'm like, yeah, I'm one of the students at Centennial. You guys sponsor us. And so we got to chatting, and he was really one of the sweetest guys. Just amazing. That's super, awesome. Super smart.
Incredible. And he probably loved that you knew this stuff. And
well, he saw my enthusiasm, because right. I was just chomping at the bit to get in the industry. So we kind of, I'd see him on and off from different events here and there while I was going to school. And then when I was going to SIGGRAPH, he and his girlfriend found out I was going. They're like, look us up. We're going to start introducing you to people. And sure That's enough, awesome. I didn't even know this company called VIFX. And VI at the time was one of the biggest Prism users.
I was about to say, they're pretty well known now.
They went out of business. They got absorbed into R&H, Rhythm okay. Hughes. But
I've
at the time,
I've heard of them.
Rhythm Hughes is huge. Okay. They won the Oscar for Babe.
That's right.
I think Golden Compass as well. But amazingly talented people there. So I got to cut my teeth at VIFX. So I went to the SIGGRAPH. They told me to go to the Prism's user group meeting where I met this gentleman named Antoine Durr, and Antoine was running it at the time. And he put me in. He was the kind of one of the head CG guys at VIFX. So he spoke with me for a bit. Then they set up an interview for me at the VIFX booth. And I got interviewed. It's like, wow, this is amazing. I'd love to come here. And they made a job offer, So out of school, I got this great job offer to work on feature films.
That's amazing.
And it was just
that's like the dream right there.
It is.
You're like, I've come so far from Arizona.
And this one of the VFX supervisors, DJ John Desjardins, phenomenal guy. He spoke with me for a while, and I was so inspired by him. And so that was kind of sealed my interest in going to VFX. And I got there, and I just met the most talented bunch of people. And just incredibly smart, and I learned so much. I mean, I was drowning at first. I was like, "What did I get into? This is you're at that time we were delivering. I think Jingle All the Way was my first film.
Wow!
And that was my first 107-hour week too.
That's crazy.
We were just back then you just had to just work these crazy hours to get these films out. Yeah, cutting my teeth. I learned so much. I had people that took me under their wing, just imparted their knowledge.
And how many people were working on that movie at that time?
I don't even know. Probably
over 100?
70. No, okay. Probably 70 or 80 at the time. It was, I think. I don't know because I was so new. I was very green.
That's so. Still not that many for that much time that it was right. Putting in. So, yeah.
But visual effects, didn't have as many shots as we do nowadays. Nowadays, right. We'll have 1,500 shots.
Wow.
Back then you might have 400, and that's considered a big show.
Crazy.
So, So for VFX, I worked there. God, what was it? I don't remember. I think it was probably 3.5 years.
What were some of the films that you worked on when you were there?
So it's Jingle All the Way, then I think a movie called Volcano.
Yeah.
A movie called Firestorm.
Yeah.
With Howie Long.
I love, they're all like special effects heavy. So you know what, like in that world... I assume that everybody's just super gung-ho because they're special effects heavy movies.
Totally. And, everyone's inspired and everyone's just really excited to be on a film at the time. And you see some really smart people try to take it to the next level.
Right.
What can we do next? What pushes it? Then I worked on Star Trek Insurrection, which was awesome.
That, like, the inner geek in all of us is like, whoa. That's it.
Yeah, absolutely. And... the VFX supervisor was on it, and then the DFX supervisor was the first person assigned to it, and then I was the first animator.
Wow.
So I got to previs all these drones attacking people.
That's awesome.
And I was like, this is a dream job. Oh, my God. So, and then we slowly built up the team more and more, and I was just, as animating, and it was just a dream come true at that point. And then I think after that I worked on, or maybe... there's a movie, an IMAX movie called T-Rex before that.
Yeah.
Back then, IMAX movies were about 40 minutes long.
Yeah. I've seen a lot of them, so I think I've seen that one as well.
Well, that one was huge for us because I think that was the first time we actually hit a terabyte of data because the IMAX format was so large.
Wow.
And, nowadays you hit a terabyte. Just with effects caches,
Right.
But back then, it was a huge deal for us. So, and then after VI, I was unfortunately caught in a wave of layoffs because, you know, things were slowing down in the industry at that
point. Well, it happens all the time.
It happens all the time. But I was lucky enough to be there for 3 years, like, you know?
Right, right.
And then they were absorbed into Rhythm & Hughes, and I worked for a small company for a few months, and then I was lucky enough to get into Sony Pictures and ImageWorks.
Wow.
And then that was just an amazing place to get into, and I worked there for 15 years.
Wow. Wow.
So I was lucky to be there for 15 years, and I started off on a movie called Hollow Man.
Yeah.
And our team was started doing tracking, but I wanted to do a little bit more, so I offered to come up with a system to track the clothes. So the tracking supervisor, I asked him to put dots all over Sebastian's costume. And then I wrote I created the model, and I didn't create it, but someone created it for me. And then I created a little deformation system that would track each dot and deform his clothing so we could turn it off. And I'd hand that off to the clothing simulation team to finish it off. And then we'd animate the wires and everything on there. And that turned into the next project was Harry Potter and the Sorcerer's Stone.
Oh, my God.
So the cloth lead on that show, we became great friends at that point, and he took me on and took me under his wing and taught me how to do digital clothing. So at that point, we were doing what's called panel cloth. We're tailoring much in like a real-world sense. You take panels and you stitch them together to make costumes. And that became my specialty for a while. And
so tell me, like, what costume in Harry Potter, for example, something you would work on, or something that we would not think is a VFX?
Well, so the robes for the kids, they all flew in brooms, right? So their whole costumes had to be tailored.
That's crazy.
The troll costume in the bathroom, the troll that was attacking, I forgot which kid. But anyways, the school uniforms, the robes, the Quidditch uniforms had to be tailored. The troll's robe, or not robe, sorry. He had just like a loincloth. I can't remember who else. Anything digital double. So when you have a digital double, you're replacing that on a live action character on a stunt that can't be done live action.
Right.
You know, it's too dangerous, or it just can't be done. So you kind of hand off to a digital double at that point.
So, like, were they doing green screen shots, and then you were
sometimes green screens, and then for the Quidditch matches, yeah, they do the green screens for Quidditch matches, and then for the ones where it's a more establishing shot, or the kids are flying around or doing something that they just couldn't shoot practically, we would jump in and do the whole thing digitally on a broom.
Now I'm gonna ask a crazy, probably dumb question to you. How long would something, let's say 5 seconds of clothing flapping in the wind, how long do you think that would take to animate and from start to finish? Just to give people an idea.
Well, it all depends if they're just standing there and, you know, on top of a roof and there's wind blowing like a Batman, you know, the bat cape or something. Right. Or if you're on a Quidditch broom and you're flying around and you're doing loops.
Give us both.
I mean, yeah, to do the Batman cape, you just, you know, once that thing's tailored, you know, you've got maybe the costume could be 15 days to tailor.
Wow.
You know, and then maybe about, you know, for him just standing on there with a windy cape, that's half a day to a day, depending on your setup. You're always going to have a master setup for a scenario where someone's tested out the properties and kind of saved those as a master file.
So for that shot, it would take 2 to 3 weeks, safe to say.
Well, see, then for lighting too, then lighting's going to come in. They spend a few days lighting it. Compositing comes in, but, you know, animation has to pose the character and, you know,
so maybe what we had a month now, you think?
It could be a month. Wow. You know, just say like the Quidditch matches, you've got a couple of kids
flying around.
So you've got, you know, you've got the animation time for that. You've got the simulation time for that. Then you've got, it has to be lit and then composited and whatever effects that might go along. So if there's kind of magic dust or something that happens, but you're simulating the hair as well, the hairstyles.
And it's kind of like, you know, as far as I know, it's like layers, right? Isn't like everything's kind of like a thin layer that is kind of on top of itself?
You're digitally? Talking about for the clothing?
Yeah. Yes. I mean, you know what I mean? Just for the images, basically, like how you're designing stuff.
So, yeah, there are passes you render out. So you'll render out a beauty pass. It'll be the color and the texture of a costume and of the skin of the person. And then it's called AOVs, and those are kind of alternate output values, variables that get put in for shadowing, for specular highlights, so that type of thing. But there could be, you know, 50 AOVs. There could be depending on the scene, whatever you need, there could be 15, 20.
That's crazy. And the attention to detail with, I'm always amazed with the attention to detail with any film that does that kind of VFX or animation, because most people, you know, what you just told me may be a scene that is not the most important scene, but it's that preparation to make that little part of the movie happen takes so much longer than what most people would think.
Well, there's whole complete digital environments you have to create,
right?
You know, and,
right.
and there's going to be anything from the ground, adding, you know, maybe it's an outdoor scene with trees. So it's like Wizard of Oz, we created these complete outdoor scenes, right? And there was a yellow brick road that was shot with blue screen in the background. And then we added on and we extended that and put matte paintings in the background. And then we built trees. And then the grass was actually hair. So we, and that was blowing the breeze too. And then we had instance geometry, like flowers and any type of shrubbery. And they're like, it's instanced and kind of groomed onto that ground.
And how is it basically decided what is going to be in that scene? Like,
so you have a concept design first.
Okay.
You'll always have a concept design that you start off with. And then you, then from there, you kind of expand on that. And what's this really going to look like when we put this into a 3D world?
Interesting. And you, everybody's divided into basically a strength of what they do. Like you said, clothing was a thing that you were...
It depends on the company. So a lot of large companies will have different divisions that do that. So mine, you know, my specialty was character effects. So it's cloth and hair being the also the instance ground being the flowers, the grass, and whatnot. And then you have another team.
So cool.
They do the look dev for a character. So their specialty is making that character, be it an animated character in an animated feature or a live action character. Their responsibility is the look development of that. And then,
and what is the biggest challenge with all of it? Is it?
I mean, all
the,
of it's challenging.
all
of it's challenging, right?
But so, I've heard like, you know, things like water are very difficult to animate, or you know, maybe it's the hairs on an animal that you see the detail. Is it? Is
rubbing
it
a hand through the hair? Right. Having someone pet an animal.
Right.
So then you've got, you know, you're affecting instanced hairs at that point. So you have to have some kind of magnet that affects that and presses those hairs around. So it goes in between people's fingers, or there's, you see and notice that interaction there.
That's so wild.
So yeah, no, there's a lot of stuff in the simulation of water to, we've come a long way with that, but every year there's a leap and bound that, you know, we see the progression.
Do you find yourself like amazed at how the technology is improving with how groundbreaking things are becoming visually, just with things like VR and, you know, it's becoming an immersive experience. You
these
know?
Real-time engines are remarkable, and we're getting to that level of photorealism and interactivity. It's just remarkable how fast these graphics cards are.
So, and how did that come about? Like, when did graphics cards become a thing?
Man, that's been forever. It's, you know, you have to have a good graphics card from doing anything from Photoshop back, you know, anything back in the 80s, just moving on up. Every year there's a progression. You see things more, you know, developing more and more. Back when I first started, the strongest graphics cards were in the silicone graphics units, you know, and those were crazy machines at the time. You know, you have an entry level machine being 20 grand.
Wow.
Or you have a nicer box being 60, 70 grand, right? And then those cards, the software started releasing on Windows and to different flavors of Unix, and you'd see, you know, Windows-based machines, those PCs getting better and better at graphics cards. So the accessibility became, you know, anyone could do it.
And, you know, from the movies you were just listing to, like, working on a Harry Potter movie, I'm sure you read the books or heard of the stories. And working on something like that, you must have been like, this is exactly why I'm doing this.
Absolutely.
You know? It's like fantasy world, you know.
You hear something like Harry Potter's coming in, you're like, oh, I've got to get on that show. How do I get on? How do I pitch myself to get on that show, you know?
That's so crazy.
You know, now, or Alice Wonderland comes through, like, I gotta get on that. You know, that's amazing. Or Spider-Man 2. I was lucky enough to work on Spider-Man 2, and we won the Oscar at ImageWorks for the Doc Ock character, you know, the movie with Doc Ock. That was just such an awesome show to work with. And back then, you know, we spent a lot of time on visual effects shows. So nowadays, you break up a visual effects show between many vendors.
Right.
Okay. So, but back then, you'd have the main vendor, and in this case, it was ImageWorks on Spider-Man 2, and I spent myself close to 2 years on that show, from development all the way through final delivery. Nowadays, you'll get a section of that, and you'll have maybe 8 months to deliver that.
And you know what, on Spider-Man 2, did you ever get, like, crazy director notes or like any, like who's giving who notes? Is it the VFX supervisor? Is it, how is it kind of all coordinated?
But it starts off with your leads and then your CG supervisors, and the CG supes will determine what they want to show to the VFX supervisor, and the VFX soup will then determine, well, am I going to show this to the director? And then then you get Sam Raimi's notes on it.
Insane. I mean, who's a director that you've always wanted to work with?
Sam Raimi was one. I mean, he...
Well, check that off your list.
I know. I was a huge Army of Darkness fan.
Yeah,
so
totally.
When he took over when he was awarded the Spider-Man franchise, I didn't get to work on Spider-Man 1. So when I got into 2, I was so excited.
Yeah, especially... You know? And 2 is... probably my favorite one for the first three that with Tobey Maguire.
Same here. It's my favorite too.
Yeah, Doc Ock was awesome.
He was awesome. He was awesome.
A great character, and the effects were amazing. You definitely could see the difference between the first Spider-Man and the second Spider-Man, like that attention to detail, and also probably had a bigger budget to do more crazy stuff.
And they were doing, it was groundbreaking. Spider-Man 1 had such large environments. You're doing all of New York City, so
yeah.
The team had to figure all that out. So you could take it up a notch on Spider-Man 2, and then same with Spider-Man 3, you take it up that next level too.
And do you ever take assets from the first Spider-Man to use?
Absolutely. You know, you always start off and you plus from there. So there could be a building library, there could be the characters that you first scanned and used, and then you kind of expand on that, and the suit changes every movie. There was attention to detail on that. You'd see tiny little nuances, but you had to change the suit.
And you have to make the colors like...
Exactly.
A little bit more bolder, crisper, things like that, right?
And you still do a character acquisition. Every time, every movie, you do a new character acquisition because actors change, and then the suits change, the costumes change. So you have to do these digital scans all the time anyways.
So what other movies did you work on when you were there at Sony?
Sony was Hollow Man first, then Harry Potter, then Stuart Little 2,
yeah.
Which looked amazing. And then what else was there? That was Spider-Man 2 after that.
How long does Spider-Man 2 take to work on?
For us, it was close to 2 years.
Wow.
Yeah. And, of course, there's pre-production before that.
And do you ever get tired of working on the same project like that? Or is it just like, no, like, let's keep on hustling?
I mean, for me, I would have loved the chance to work on Spider-Man 3 as well, you know?
Right.
But you always love the new challenges that come up. Because we worked on Beowulf after that, or in Polar Express.
That was a good movie.
Worked on Polar Express as well.
Yeah, awesome movies.
And then I got to work on Open Season. That was Sony Pictures Animation's first animated feature, and that was just, what a remarkable time. That was just so awesome to work on. Again, that was probably, you know, a year and a half to 2 years for my team. But, you know, of course, they're in pre-production much longer than that.
And are you keeping in touch with Jesh this whole time?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. So Jesh and I would keep in contact, and you know, I'd see him, you know, he was in Toronto. When I went to L.A., he stayed in Toronto and rose through the ranks and became a visual effects supervisor and even opened up a command post to help open that up in Vancouver, and then went over to Henson in London.
Wow.
So we'd be in contact all the time, just seeing what everyone's doing, and just seeing what our friends are doing too. And then Jesh went back to India, and his mom fell ill at the time. So he was spending time with his mom and then decided, in the meantime, I'm kind of bored here. I need to do something. Like, I'm going to open up a company. I'm going to call it Anabrain. I'm like, what does that mean? He's like, I don't know. Animation Brain, I guess.
I love the name.
So it's, you know, here it is. 14 years later, I watched him grow up from 2 people, and we're close to 800 now.
Wow.
So I started working for him when I left ImageWorks. And
what did he call you and say, I'm starting this company, come work with me?
Well, no, he had already grown at that point. I think it was about 300, 350 maybe at the time I joined. And then I've been with Anabrain for the past 5 years, and it's now almost 800.
Well, what's amazing, too, it's like you guys have done, yeah, I saw, you know, what's the movie? Fantastic Beasts, Crimes of Grindelwald. I saw, what's the movie with Harrison Ford and...
Blade Runner.
Yeah. And you know what? It's like, as we were working together, I kept seeing your guys' names in the credits. I was like... How awesome is this? This is crazy.
And it's great. We got to support our sister company is Framestore.
Hmm.
And Framestore bought into Anabrain a few years back. And, just to partner with them and support them, you know, it could be something from camera tracking, roto and paint, and trying to do a plate prep for them. So they're such an awesome company to work with, and they're top of their game. And, of course, you know, they won the Oscar for 2049.
Wow. That was a great movie.
It was,
awesome.
It was.
Just the visually,
stunning visuals. And when you see all the layers that went into that, when you see the making of, it's just remarkable. Richard Huber was the VFX soup for that, and he did an amazing job.
And what's like a typical like obstacle? Like you maybe have a scene that you're working on. What's like oh my God, I can't believe we didn't back up this. What's like something, give me like a pitfall of the process that.
Well, okay, so just say like even like Harry Potter 1, you know, when we were working on that, the animation was done in such a way that it wasn't actually moving through space. You know, the camera was doing all the motion. So, and that's the way they kind of directed it. And they got some really cool moves out of it. But we had to go back as the character effects team and animate that ourselves to get the motion we needed. So we animated that, we zeroed the whole character out and then put it moving forward. We had an animator on our team where it was simulation friendly to us. And then we had to zero it back out and put it into shot space for lighting to take. So once in a while, you meet these challenges and you just find out what's the solution.
Yeah. So no matter how crazy and ridiculous and you know, imaginative it is.
And just say like Polar Express. So my friend Sho was the character effects supervisor on that, and I helped out in the beginning. And we had the challenge back then of, you know, this panel cloth system where you have to tailor each costume, right, panel by panel. And we're like, well, we're going to need something faster because we have a boatload of characters to do. We don't have the time to tailor them all. So what we want to do is we want to scan them digitally and then make clothing out of that. So at the time, Alias's software didn't do that. It was all panel based. And I think there's only one, I think there's a program called Cyflex at the time that did object cloth. But we had a partnership with Alias. So they came in and helped rewrite the engine to accept this object cloth so we could scan them in and tailor it. And you don't get true volume out of that. It's a little challenging there. But it was, that was 2003, 2004,
and such a crazy classic movie too.
Yes,
like you literally made a movie that will be played every year at Christmas.
That's the nice thing about working on a Christmas movie too.
No, but I mean, there are a lot of Christmas movies that don't become classics.
True.
That became a classic that and it's also I think Zemeckis directed that.
Yes.
Right?
Yeah.
And you had Tom Hanks and you had all these great actors in it and ensemble, and it was also a newer way the animation was kind of looking.
Doing the motion capture methodology, and Robert Zemeckis really pushed that and pushed hard to develop that along with ImageWorks, and so it was groundbreaking at the time.
Was there anything that you guys had to tell Robert Zemeckis? Okay, easy, buddy. We can't do that. The technology hasn't gotten to that point yet.
I wasn't privy at the time, so I was pretty much just a grunt. So I'm not involved in those high level discussions.
Well, nobody would hear of any request or anything.
I didn't hear of anything. So
you just had assignments always. It was just like, okay.
It just came down the pipe and, execute this. Make this happen.
And do certain things take longer than you think they're going to take ever?
Once in a while you get a shot where, maybe, you saw the storyboards, you bid out so many days for it. And then the animation turned out to be a little more challenging. So, that's typical. That's just production.
Now, when you started working with Anabrain, now what's really cool about Anabrain, they're an independent company. And in that world of animation and VFX, that is one of the most difficult things to do, is to have a company kind of come out of the gates as an independent, not associated with any company, and just try and getting work and proving themselves. What do you guys find as a team that is the hardest, maybe it's an inroad or the biggest obstacle to kind of convince Warner Brothers or Sony or whoever.
Well, yeah, here's
you
the
guys
thing,
can do stuff.
We start off supporting other companies, right?
Right.
And that's how Jess started off. Supporting people that he worked with for many years. They'd be a visual effects supervisor on a show. So it's all through context, and it's who you know. And
right.
They'd say, hey, do you have the bandwidth to work on a couple sequences for us here? And that's how it grew. And so sometimes when people don't know who you are, there's always going to be a little hesitancy to embark on that.
Well, and I find that a lot of companies do that. They kind of outsource to other companies, whether it's their current plate is full and they're finding other ways to kind of just incorporate. But it seems to be like this very competitive, but also like there is a stay in your lane kind of part to it, where everybody kind of knows the work it dictates getting more work. You know what I mean?
Right, for sure. And it's you know, when companies have the permission to outsource, it's great, and then they invite us along, and sometimes we get direct work from a VisualFlex supervisor. So we work in just in many routes.
Well, I got to tell you, in working with you guys personally, you know, we had a situation where we started an animated short / music video, and then one of the animators passed away, and we had no idea how to get these assets. And you know, we ended up meeting because of Andreas Jablanka, who's been on the show, and you know, we ended up working together, and the attention to detail was amazing right off the bat. I remember just getting 3D models and getting all these, you know, environments to just show us what the look and style would be, and everything was elevated. I have to say, like, you know, having gone through this short amount of time with the previous animator and then having you guys as a team take it over, and the hard thing was you were like, yeah, we're going to just have to start completely over. And me being, you know, a novice at, you know, when it comes to animation, I didn't understand. Like, I'm like, why can't you just take what those assets were or something? There's got to be something we can keep. You're like, no, we got to start all from the beginning and just make this better on every level. And that was something that I will always remember, that attention to detail, that you guys really take your work seriously. And that's a rare thing. I'm sure you see it in some of the films that sometimes come out where you're like, this is crazy. We could have done this 10 times better because of that attention to detail.
Totally, and I appreciate your compliments too. Now, we loved working with you and Jacob on this, and Andreas, you know, yeah. And it's a great experience too. And you know, that was part of our experience coming from a visual effects house, where we had to have a lot of attention to detail to put elements into a live action plate. And we wanted to bring that to the animated world. And we'd done an animated feature for the United Emirates at that point, where it was a high level of detail as well. And we just want to bring that visual sense to whatever we do. We always want to plus it.
Well, let's play. We got a little something we got to play. I want to play this this little reel or a demo that you have. This is on Anna Brain's website, or this is on Vimeo, right?
I think, yeah, it's our Vimeo site.
And this is called the Roar Photoreal Creatures.
Now, this, I have to warn you, this reel is about 7 years old, six or seven years old.
Oh, that's okay. We don't, you know, I know it's good. Don't worry. All right, here it goes.
Thank you.
Yeah, that was awesome.
Thanks, man. Thanks, man. You worked really hard on that.
You know what's crazy? So in that trailer, you basically see them create, Anna Brain create a tiger, an alligator, snakes, a chameleon, and flamingos. Did I get them all?
Yeah. Yeah, I think so.
And it shows you every step of building each part of it. And you know what? When you're watching that, you don't think there's that much stuff going on. But
and then you saw like some of those AOVs, the arbitrary output values were variables were you did. That's just a few of them that were used.
That's
not
so
all of them,
crazy.
A lot of it builds up to build up the composite.
What was really neat is like when you showed the reference of the tiger. Like you see the real tiger and your CG tiger, and your CG tiger actually looked more real than the real tiger. Really crazy. So and thank just you. The movements too, and the walking. It's just so awesome. I mean, just awesome. Anna Brain, you guys kick ass.
And that's our first creature reel too. And that's the first creature show they did. So Jess showed that reel to me while I was in between jobs. I left ImageWorks. I was working for one of my old visual effects supervisors for a few months, and I was doing some of my own. I think my brother-in-law Chris Holt, he created a show that we were trying to pitch, and I think it's on YouTube. It's called Hips and Hipster, and it's just a 2D silly thing. A lot of fun though. It's a blast. It's all about life in New Orleans. And
oh, you got to send that to me.
So yeah, I'll send you the link. It's Hips and Hipster. It's on YouTube.
And sorry.
So I was doing that in between, and then Jesh calls me up and says, "Look, if you're not doing anything right now, and you know." Are you going to go back into production as a supervisor or do you want to try something different? I'm like, well, I'm up for trying something different. And he's like, I need someone to represent Anna Brain here in North America and kind of build up the brand. And I was like, well, I've never done sales or that type of level, you know, executive producing it all. Let me give it a shot. I'll jump into it again. Like I got into animation school. I jumped into it. It's like, let's do it.
Well, we can't say too much, but we're going to collaborate on something even bigger than what we did before.
Yes, we are.
And I feel and see good things. Where can people find Anna Brain if they want to, you know, have them work on a part of a movie or a scene or a whole movie or an
animated please reach
short?
Out to me. I mean, it's Mark D'Souza, Mark D, M-A-R-K-D, at annabrain.com. That's A-N-I-B-R-A-I-N.com. And our site, annabrain.com. Of course, there's a general contact page on there too. But yeah, we'd love to help out in whatever project you have, be it a feature or a TV show, or we do virtual reality as well. So if you have a VR experience you're trying to build, yeah, please reach out. We'd love to help out.
And there you have it. Check out Anna Brain for all your VFX and animation needs. Mark, what a fantastic guest you've been. Thank you for
inviting me.
Thank you for hanging out and telling us about a world a lot of people don't know much about. You know, I know it's like the back of your hand to you, but to us, it's such a foreign adventure. So thank you for explaining so much of that. And you have to come back.
I'd love to.
We'll have to come back together when we do.
Oh, yes. We'll have
what we're going to do later with this bigger project. Anyways.
I can't wait.
Yeah, man. It's going to be good times. On behalf of myself, Eddie Pence, and Ronen, we'll see you guys next week.